returning again to T.H. Tetton's. Have the Nazi schemers, the Achenbachs, Naumanns, and company accomplished what they aimed for after the Nazi collapse? Have they regained influence and power in the Bonn Republic? The answer has been given in the affirmative by the plotters themselves. Long before, they had captured numerous key positions in the Adenauer administration, in political parties, and in the Länder or state parliaments, L-A-E-N-D-E-R. They were exuberant about their successes in one of their secret directives circulated by the Nazi headquarters in Madrid. This lengthy document, issued in September of 1950, spoke contemptuously of the total failure of the Western occupation policy and pointed gleefully to the success of the, quote, flexible and smoothly working organization which at the end of the war provided the precondition for all the gains that by necessity emerged for Germany out of the chaos of the post-war period. 5 years after Potsdam, we can look back with pride at our accomplishments. Nothing happened by chance. Everything was carefully planned. Again, note the phrasing here. The success of the, quote, flexible and smoothly working organization, which at the end of the war provided the precondition for all the gains that by necessity emerged for Germany out of the chaos of the post-war period. 5 years after Potsdam, we can look back with pride at our accomplishments. Nothing happened by chance. Everything was carefully planned. And that unquote, and Tetten's goes on to add in an asterisk, the Madrid Circular Letter gave a general analysis of the world situation 5 years after the German collapse and put special emphasis on the possibilities of a German comeback. Again, special emphasis on the possibilities of a German comeback. Now, note, this is the Nazi Party in exile, and I realize that this will seem, as the fellow in that radio broadcast, High Command from 1944, put it, that American Dummkopf, oh, that's Buck Rogers stuff. That's why I'm going into this material, and take note of not only the documentary sources that are cited by T.H. Tetten's, but his eminent qualifications in and of themselves. Note also that one of the reasons why these things have not had the publicity that they deserved is that it became essential during the Cold War period to portray the, quote, new, unquote, Germany as democratic, as to provide a counterpoint to the East German government, which, of course, had adopted the Stalinist style of government. Certainly don't hold a brief for that, but obviously the new Germany was not new at all. I also want to emphasize something that I will touch on in future broadcasts. There is an entire chapter in the Tetten's book called The Other Germany, talking about the fact that there were many Germans of intelligent and democratic character who were opposed to this reinstitution of Nazism, but that given the control of all of the institutions in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany by the old Nazis, T.H. Tetten's in 1961 was not optimistic about their chance to root out this particular disease. But note also that in 1950, in this Madrid Circular Letter, the possibilities of a German comeback are being discussed. This is in precisely the period of time when NSC 68 was being discussed in the United States, this providing the basis both with a huge military buildup and with the stimulation of what was described as the coercive effect of nationalism in the Warsaw Pact countries and the Soviet Union, that served as the long-term blueprint fulfilled decades later by the Reagan and Bush administrations. And again, note that the Galen Organization was an intelligence organization, a projection of the Third Reich, a functioning Third Reich entity, which functioned throughout the Second World War, was installed at the very core of the U.S. National Security Establishment, at the very core of NATO, the, quote, Christian West, unquote, and later at the very core of the, quote, new, unquote, Germany, while still providing the United States and NATO with most of its intelligence on that part of the world. Note again that the Galen Organization reported directly to Hans Globke, as we saw last week. The Eminence Grise, the first Secretary of State behind Adenauer, felt by many to be the power behind the throne, and the individual who helped draw up the Law for the Protection of the German Blood, under which all of the Nazi liquidations were conducted. The fellow who signed that, Wilhelm Frick, F-R-I-C-K, was executed at Nuremberg. And the point being here that NSC 68, drawn up under the Truman administration, provided the basic blueprint for American conduct of the Cold War. It ultimately led to the military buildup under Reagan, which bankrupted the Soviet Union, and which also, not incidentally, bankrupted the United States. And just as this Madrid Circular letter assessed the world situation in 1950 and talked about the possibilities of a German comeback, I think we can assume that at some point there would have been an analysis within the Galen organization. Bear in mind, this is an intelligence organization which grew full-blown from the Third Reich. There would have been an analysis of the effects of the Cold War on American politics, American economics, and I think the rollback or liberation theory and the excessive American military spending during the Cold War period would have been accurately foreseen by the Germans, by this quote, new unquote Germany and its residual Third Reich elements, as having the effect ultimately that it did. Again, bear in mind we're talking about a major intelligence organization, one with its genesis in the Third Reich. You take a major Third Reich intelligence organization with thousands of SS and Gestapo men in its midst, they're not going to stage a Mahjong tournament as a charity benefit. Basically, they're going to work for the interests of the Third Reich. And bear in mind that one of Galen's conditions was that for working with the Americans, when German and American interests conflicted, it would be understood that Galen would work on behalf of German interests. Well, from the standpoint of the Third Reich, American and German interests would always, always have been in conflict. And more about this Nazi party in exile in Madrid, T.H. Tettens writes, "There is considerable material available which gives conclusive proof that the Nazis had made preparations long before their collapse to train an army of agents, often skillfully camouflaged as, quote, resistance fighters, unquote. About the successful continuation of the Nazi subversive activities, the Madrid Circular Letter had this to say. Even after the collapse, the National Socialist Party continued to work in a camouflaged way, Getarnt, G-E-T-A-R-N-T, in dozens of seemingly innocuous societies and groups, in order to keep the national outlook of the German people alive and undiluted. Just as many small brooks go toward making a mighty stream, the various nationalistic and radical groups in the Zonenreich carried out, almost without exception, worthwhile and powerful propaganda. Each of these groups had its special task and had to adjust its work to certain situations and circumstances. However, it was of chief importance to direct the underlying trend of the patriotic propaganda toward the same goal. The more diverse and disconnected these groups appeared to be on the surface, the less they were apt to arouse suspicion that they were directed and influenced by a central organization. We have placed our confidential agents, observers, and representatives for special assignments in all groups and parties, even among communist organizations and their fronts. The greater the number of organizations controlled and influenced by us, the more effective will be the results of our work." And that, again, quoting directly from the Madrid Circular Letter, T.H. Tettens goes on to add, "The effectiveness and results of this Nazi strategy of infiltration will best be shown by taking a closer look at the conditions in present-day Germany." Now, again, Tettens was writing in 1961, 17 years after Kurt Ries wrote his book. Note again some of the key phrases in the Nazi Circular Letter. "Just as many small brooks go toward making a mighty stream, the various nationalistic and radical groups in the Zonenreich carried out, almost without exception, worthwhile and powerful propaganda." Indeed, recall again what Kurt Ries talked about in 1944, the decentralization of the post-World War II Third Reich underground, the cellular organization, the use of the Auslandorganisation, the organization abroad, and in particular, Kurt Ries's projection that Spain, under Francisco Franco, would serve as one of the main centers for the post-World War II Nazi underground. And note also that the Führungsring here, run from Madrid, basically controlled the Bonn government. We're going to go into the Adenauer government and many of the people in it next week. What we're going to take a look at now, though, very briefly, is the are some of the effects of the post-World War II Nazi underground in German society. And again, I want to note that there's an entire chapter here which I will touch on in Tetten's book called The Other Germany. This program and the material in it should not in any way be constructed as being anti-German or a condemnation of any individual German citizen, one of the points T.H. Tettens makes, and he devotes an entire chapter to it, called The Other Germany, is that there are many sincere and democratically minded Germans. However, it is his fear that most of them will simply be apathetic enough or resigned enough or preoccupied enough with earning their living that the institutions controlled by these Third Reich alumni and the some 20% or so of the populace who were ardent Nazis would ultimately prevail. I would add that I myself have much the same opinion of the United States in 1992. There is an other America, so to speak, but given the basic fascist nature of an awful lot of our institutions, the fact that political assassination is a way of life, the corruption of the courts, the corruption of the Justice Department, our controlled media, including our so-called alternative media, I'm not real optimistic about the future of the other America in this country any more than T.H. Tettens was in 1961, viewing Germany. Now, about how the Nazi underground in Germany was able to function and to intimidate people who were opposed to it, T.H. Tettens writes as follows, and also about their activities in the Middle East in conjunction with the Foreign Office of the Bonn government under Adenauer. There are indications, too, that the Bonn Foreign Office and West German industrialists cooperated with the Nazis in Madrid in furthering a scheme to push the French and British out of the Near and Middle East. In most Arab countries, the ties to the active Nazis were not interrupted with the collapse of the Third Reich. Many of the Nazi experts who had escaped the Allied dragnet were later hired by the Egyptian government as military, financial, and technical advisors. The official government central planning office in Cairo under Dr. Wilhelm Voss, V-O-S-S, and General Wilhelm Fahrenbach, F-A-H-R-E-M-B-A-C-H, was instrumental in arranging the armaments deal with the Soviet bloc. It is significant that the Nazi group in Cairo reportedly had closer ties to the Bonn Foreign Office than the West German ambassador, Dr. Günther Pawelke, P-A-W-E-L-K-E. Also revealing was the case of Dr. Fritz Dorls, D-O-R-L-S, the leader of the Socialist Reichs Party, which had been outlawed in 1952. This same Dr. Dorls, whose party had been exposed by the highest federal court as subversive, was, after his conviction, secretly hired by the Bonn Foreign Office for delicate assignments in the Arab countries. In 1959, Dr. Adenauer was asked in a BBC television interview whether there was a resurgence of anti-Semitism and Nazism. Now, this is 1959, okay? He flatly declared, quote, "Anti-Semitism was a characteristic of National Socialism. Both together have disappeared," unquote. That is a less than candid statement, as we have seen. 9 days before this interview, the Roman Catholic Bishop of Limburg, L-I-M-B-U-R-G, Monsignor Walter Kampe, K-A-M-P-E, wrote an editorial in his diocesan paper entitled, quote, "The Nazis in Our Midst," unquote. Monsignor Kampe spoke of, quote, "the existence of several underground organizations among the old guard Nazis," unquote, "through which they have created," again quoting, "a network of information and mutual assistance over the whole of Germany, whose influence is felt everywhere in all parties, in the administration of justice, in all professional organizations, among the ex-Belé associations, and throughout our civic and economic life," unquote. Bishop Kampe then stated, again quoting, and this is very revealing about the effect of this Nazi underground on the citizens of the, quote, "other Germany," unquote, "there are enough hot irons that nobody dares to touch because people deep in their bones feel a fear of the secret power and the brutality of the Nazi goon squads. It requires a certain courage to break that spell." And we'll talk more about the other people in the Adenauer government, about the people who succeeded Adenauer. Ludwig Erhard, who succeeded him, was another Third Reich alumni, and we've already taken a look at how Kurt Kiesinger was a key official in Goebbels' propaganda ministry. He succeeded Erhard. I would note, too, that there was a book suppressed in Germany. I have not seen it, but a book which maintains that Helmut Kohl, the current Chancellor of Germany, served in the Waffen-SS during the closing days of World War II as a teenager, and that he helped to spirit some of the top Nazi leaders out of Germany. That I've not heard very much about that book. There was an article about it in a small Las Vegas paper about 3 years ago. It said that the book was being suppressed. I don't doubt that. It's interesting to wonder whether perhaps Helmut Kohl was a graduate of the Deutsche Heimschule and whether he was one of the leaders being groomed as a future leader of this underground. Now, again, I want to emphasize this is not to imply that there are not some democratic elements in Germany or to cast aspersions on German people in general. Repeating again that a major point in T.H. Tetten's book is that there is another Germany, but he does not feel very optimistic about its future, given the control of institutions, and as Monsignor Campa discussed there, the fact that the democratic citizens of Germany were also afraid of some of these elements. I also want to emphasize something that I have stressed in other broadcasts. One of the things that has permitted the successful realization of some of these policies of the Third Reich, and ultimately, again, Eastern Europe has been in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union. The map of that part of the world has been redrawn along precisely the lines that Alfred Rosenberg of Hitler's Ostministerium had basically foreseen, or the lines that he had drawn up. Many of these Third Reich alumni and the Galen-related elements, such as the Iron Guard, the OUNB, the Sejudis organization in Lithuania, the Ustashi in Croatia, the Arrow Cross in Hungary, are dominant in some areas of that part of the world and resurgent in all of those areas. I would also note that some of the same individuals, such as Laszlo Pastor, working with the Liberation or Eastern European Liberation Organization of the Free Congress Foundation of Paul Weyrich, are still active. And again, it's institutional inertia that is one of the factors here, that in any institution, whether it's a government or a political party or a military or intelligence organization, people move up by basically fitting in. They go along, they get along, they have to get along. And if you want to move up, you basically have to conform to the attitudes and the views of superiors. This creates a certain institutional inertia, whether in a government, a political party, or a military or intelligence organization. That certainly is the case in Germany and has permitted the realization of some of these Third Reich goals long after the Third Reich had supposedly disappeared. But I also want to emphasize that, as we have seen, some of these same Galen-related elements were cropping up on George Bush's campaign in 1988. They're still active in the Republican Heritage Group's council. Some of them are active in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, such as Laszlo Pastor of the Arrow Cross. So there are some of the same individuals around, and note the tremendous foresight, the tremendous drive, and the tremendous organization of the Third Reich as it planned to go underground, the evident realization of those plans in the early 1950s, as reported by T.H. Tetten's in 1961. And note, too, the Madrid Circular Letter analyzing the world situation in 1950 and talking about the possibilities of a German comeback. Note that Reinhard Galen in 1944 was talking about allying with the Americans and with the West in order to regain Germany's lost territories. And, of course, the Galen Organization installed at the very core of NATO, which grew out of the Christian West concept, that itself, a Third Reich survival contingency plan adopted by, eventually, the Allies, that obviously became the seed for NATO. And we're going to go into the Adenauer government and other institutions in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany, including the courts and the national security establishment and the media. And this by way, again, of assessing the dog that wags the tail of the Galen Organization by taking a look at the political, military, national security, and economic forces in Germany that were dominating the Galen Organization, which in turn was interacting with very powerful national security, economic, and political forces in the United States. This by way of understanding how the United States experienced a political and consequent economic defeat, how it lost the Second World War. And that concludes this installment of Radio Free America number 37.